going, and if Chair Danner is available and calls in, he'll catch the rest of it. So, good afternoon. This is the adoption hearing for the Contract Rail Crew Transportation Rulemaking and Docket TR170780. I'm Ann Rendall, Commissioner with Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission, and I'm joined here in the hearing room by Commissioner Jay Blasbus and our Chair, David Danner, we hope is calling in telephonically. So, appreciate you all being here for this adoption hearing. We've had workshops and drafts and comments and a lot of interaction by stakeholders, and here we are now at the adoption hearing to hear more from you all about our proposal. And so let's hear from Matt Perkinson, who's the rulemaking lead, about to tee off the discussion. And then we'll hear from the stakeholders. I have a sign-in sheet, and I will call you up here to the table and have you give us your comments. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Matthew Perkinson. I'm the Motor Carrier Safety Manager, also the co-lead on this rulemaking. I'm here to offer recommendation on behalf of staff regarding the Contract Railroad Crew Transportation Rules in Docket 170780. Before I get into a recommendation, I'd like to say thank you to a few people, including the commissioners, throughout this process for offering your problem-solving skills and creativity. It's allowed our team to swiftly resolve issues and eliminate potential roadblocks. The various stakeholders, some of which are in the room, for their comments and participation in workshops. Wouldn't be able to work on those drafts without that. finally, our rulemaking team, some of which are in the room, Rain, Jason Lewis, Jason Sharp, Paige, Julian, we're going to miss you. And then finally, just a special thanks to Vicki Elliott for her guidance as co-lead. So with that, after reviewing the comments filed in response to the CR 102 and proposed rules, staff recommends the commission adopt rules as filed with the code reviser on February 23rd, 2018, including minor revisions found in the adoption hearing memo. Staff believes that these rules will allow the commission to effectively and fairly regulate companies providing contract crew transportation with respect to a variety of safety topics. Staff believes that the commission and various stakeholders have reached reasonable consensus in developing these rules. And with that, I'm available for questions, as well as other members of the rulemaking team and various stakeholders that are in the room, including SMART, BLET, BNSF Railway, and other industry representatives. So, thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Just a quick question. So the rulemaking memo identified, initially we had a couple of changes and then identified a few more. Do you mind just running quickly through those?
Absolutely.
So we have that in the record?
Absolutely. So the first, the majority of these are going to be minor revisions or grammatical in nature. So WAC 480, 62, 240, 1D, staff recommends amending the spelling of insure to insure. 480, 62, 240, 1G. Staff recommends adding clarifying language as to when a driver must determine whether required equipment is in a vehicle. The third would be WAC 480, 62, 245, 5A. Staff recommends inserting Roman numerals in four places to make it consistent throughout the rule. 480, 62, 278, Section 6 and 7, staff recommends replacing the word that with who. And 480.62, 281.1, 2 and 3, staff recommends replacing the word passenger with contract crew in three places. WAC 480.62, 287, staff recommends amending the language requiring a contract railroad crew transportation company to post a specific contact person at the commission, essentially making it more of a general contact with the ultimate goal of going to the commission's website and filing a complaint with the commission. And finally, 480.62.999, staff recommends removing the words branch of the Washington State to make records available at the commission for review, the commission library.
And that's because we no longer have a branch of the state library here, but we have our own library, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you running through those changes. It's amazing how many eyes look at these things, and then you look at them once more, and you find a few more things. So we hope we've gotten them in as good shape as possible, and now we'd like to hear from all of you who are here to talk to us. The first person on our list is Tracy Council with SMART. If you'd like to make comments, come on up. If not, I'll move to the next person. Okay. Mr. Hellman, Johann Hellman with BNSF Railway. And if the light is bright red on the bottom, at the base of the... there you go. It's on.
Thank you. Well, I really don't have substantive comments this afternoon. In addition to what we've seen, there's already been, as you mentioned, a very robust conversation about this issue and much discussion over the last year and actually over several years on this. So I really just wanted to thank Chair Danner, thank the members of the commission, thank the staff who've worked on this for a very long time. Recognize that this state, Washington State, is really in a pioneering effort. We're one of only a handful of states that's taking on these kind of protections. And so in a number of ways, we're really leading the country and the other states in this kind of regulation, which is important to keep in mind. When we approach rulemakings like this, there's always this strange tension in meeting the balance between identifying every instance or contingency in the rule or statute that could possibly happen and allowing the regulatory elegance and flexibility to be able to adapt to changes in the marketplace, changes in technology, different things that we might take on. And so through this conversation, I think we've really arrived at a very good balance. I appreciate the consideration of the issues that we've raised and have continued to raise. I wanted to notice in the adoption memo the inclusion of number 6, which amends the language requiring a contract railroad crew transportation company to post a specific contact person at the commission. While this is really a technical change, I think it does have a substantive effect as well, and really makes it much easier to smooth through the implementation of this requirement, and also situations where we might have gaps in staffing or things like that, where it just wouldn't really be feasible to post a new sticker every time a staff person changed. Last thing I wanted to say was we're content with the rule as it stands right now. You know, there's kind of that old adage in legislating and rulemaking that if you get to the end and, you know, nobody's 100% happy, then you've probably done your job there. You've probably met the right balance. Certainly the conversation doesn't end when the rule passes or when the law passes, but really it continues on through the implementation phase. And so as we shift into that, we're very optimistic about where this is going. I think that it helps us meet all of our common goals of ensuring that people get home safely, which is really what we all agree on at the end of the day. And so this isn't the end. In many ways, it's just the beginning. We look forward to continuing the conversation. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I thank you for your time and consideration on this.
Thank you very much. I have no questions.
Thank you
very much. Appreciate your involvement and active involvement and suggestions in this process.
Thank you.
Okay. Shareem Allen with BLET WSLB. And I hope I pronounced your name correct. You can correct me if I did not.
Shareem.
Got it. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon.
And you'll have to press the button. I think it's not.
Okay, here we go.
There you go.
Okay, good afternoon to you both. I just wanted to be brief and thank you and the UTC for everything that you've done, the hard work. I've experienced the legislative session here of 2018 and come to understand just what it takes, and it's no easy task. So I just wanted to tip my hat and say thank you once again. I want to briefly speak towards the comments that were provided here and stakeholder comments from QM Transportation. What really stands out in my mind is the mandatory necessity for winter tires, studded winter tires in when such conditions require. As a little background with a story here, winter of 2012, traversing the Cascade Mountains west to, or east to west from Ellensburg to Auburn, Washington, in the eastern foothills, there's a quite the winter storm, 4 to 6 foot of snow, and I was a part of a train crew, as I'm an active locomotive engineer, part of a train crew, and one other, so two train crews and the driver, so five occupants in a six-occupant vehicle, the Suburban, Chevy Suburban, that nearly avoided disaster based upon the use of studded tires and the experience of the driver. Through her career of being a contracted driver and education in road safety and the use of the studded tires, essentially we averted disaster from as there was a head-on, or not a head-on, but a collision with a semi-truck and cars in front of us directly. That if it was not for her quick thinking and the ability for the vehicle to withstand or to perform accurately or adequately in that situation, we were looking to either go over the side of the roadway into a ravine or head on into the rear end of a semi truck and all those cars that could not avoid the disaster. Having those tires as mandatory for the vehicle during that time of year in that inclement weather condition is something that is the reason why I'm here speaking for you before you today. Another point that I would like to speak towards is the necessity of having a medical card certification. With a person being in health, in poor health, there needs to be an understanding that when driving a vehicle of this nature, transporting train crews, that they are able to withstand the rigors and essentially the stresses that the body is placed under at all times of the day, hours of darkness and times of the day, based upon hours spent driving. It even goes as far to mention that the majority of those who are employed by QM Transport are retirees, people between jobs, and the disabled. Now, if that doesn't give me a red flag for possible, I don't want to say possible disaster, but for reasons to be more aware of the health and condition of the person who are transporting, the railroad workers, train crews, myself as one, that's the writing is right. It's in black and white. They kind of pointed it out themselves directly that these are individuals whose health may be in question, and there needs to be a better understanding or firm understanding of just how it may be impactful or not impactful that it may be. And I believe that a industry standard as having a medical card or a medical evaluation to say that they are physically capable or able is something that I would support. That's about all on that note, and more so towards the end of education of the driver, of the drivers in specific, the railroad for the railroad to pass the need or the responsibility to another outfit in the place of them, specifically because of the territory, the specific, and the areas that are only privileged to the railroad and the railroad industry. I think the railroad would be better inclined to actually be able to provide the education necessary for an understanding because of the proprietary areas of the railroad themselves. No one knows the railroad territory better than the railroad, the train crews. Someone can act as liaison to point out the trouble spots, the areas of concern of where a driver needs to have an extended understanding of what actually they'll be faced or up against when they encounter these areas, and depending on what the conditions are of the year, especially as the weather changes so rapidly in the Pacific Northwest and the Puget Sound in specific, you never can tell. So it would be for the railroad to have someone of an educated understanding would be better than to give them a book of materials to say this is what you're to be prepared for and figure it out. Because it's all through sometimes things get lost in translation more from someone who doesn't to someone who doesn't know than to a group who has a firm grasp of the understanding itself. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Allen. Herb Krohn. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Commissioners. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. This has been a long, long road. I'll try to keep my comments very brief. I think I've submitted plenty of comments online and throughout this entire process. In terms of the regulations, we think the regulations are pretty strong. We do have some concerns. One of them, of course, is probably the one that gives us the biggest heartache is the absence of a requirement for studded tires in winter weather conditions. I've known too many railroaders. I represented one who lost his career in Western Washington in snowy conditions. Vans slid down a hill when they were taking the crew to a train, and he injured his neck. He never came back, and there are quite a few others. So the issue of snow tires is very important in winter weather conditions. I mean, I'm not saying that every vehicle should have snow tires, but I believe that if they're operating in those conditions, there needs to be some oversight in that area. Of course, we've specified in writing that we would really like to see independent driver training and some type of qualification test. And the documents here, I believe, are incorrect because I was reading through them and it said that we were advocating that the drivers be over 18. Actually, we were advocating they be over 25. However, I've learned since then that probably the insurance requirements of the companies that insure contract crew transportation carriers probably require that they be over 25. So I let the market handle that one, I suppose. But the studded tires is the big one. Lastly, on the number 12, the change in the language of signage. I was looking at the UTC website for filing a complaint, and it's designed for utility customers. It asks for an account number, and it asks for company address and things of that nature that railroad passengers may or may not know. The other thing that it has is it has a disclaimer stating that the contents are publicly disclosable. And I believe that it's important that the signage in the vehicles refer to the commission's phone number, the email address, and that they say that, you know, these matters are handled through the commission's motor carrier safety manager. I'm not suggesting that they list any names, but I think it would be good to list, you know, in case someone is having a bureaucratic issue, who they should try to contact directly, because your website does list all of your staff and their titles, which is really good. But we want to make sure that the signage is of adequate size, you know, that it's not little typewritten items that people can't see, and that it's very clear, and that those who report their identity, the confidentiality of their identity, is protected by state law. Other than that, this is the end of a long path. There have been a lot of injuries. There have been fatalities. There's been a lot of lost careers, a lot of mayhem, and of course we all know what happened in Kelso. And now we've been involved in a 6-year process, and I want to thank the commission staff, particularly Commissioner Rendall in your previous incarnation as the policy director, and all the time that you and the agency put into trying to resolve the disagreements between our organization and the carrier and try to get some good legislation. And I think that's eventually what ended up happening. But you were in it early, and we want to thank you for that. And we want to thank the staff of the commission. You've done an admirable job, and this has not been, as Mark Sidrin, a former commissioner, used to tell me, if you don't like sausage or legislation, you should never watch either being made. And
Although I like to think that our process maybe is not quite the sausage that you might have elsewhere.
Yes, I believe at least it's very high quality.
Well, thank you. All right, well, I'll take that.
And but I think, you know, that once the order is made, that this will be the beginning of a new era. for railroad workers in Washington State, an era of greater safety and an era of regulatory oversight that has been needed for many, many years. And we look forward to continuing to work with the commission, because whenever you put anything new, there are always tweaks and things that need to be made, and we appreciate the cooperation and all the assistance the commission has given in terms of trying to ensure that what has been adopted is something that y'all can live with, and that it's reasonable and enforceable. And with that, just I want to, from the bottom of my heart, how thankful we are for all the support and all the assistance in terms of getting this thing finally done, and all the questions we've had and the answers. It's not been easy for your staff, I'm sure, and I know it was not easy for you in your previous incarnation, but we really appreciate it. Our lives are at stake in these things, and it's very very, very important, and this will bring us into a new time period, and we're looking forward to that. Thank you so much. If you have any questions.
I just have one, and this has to do with a notice requirement discussion. And you said that the identity is protected by state law, and I'm wondering if you're referring to the Public Records Act.
Yes.
Because the names of people who submit complaints are not necessarily confidential, but other information is. And so I'm just asking if that's the source of your understanding that it's confidential.
Well, under the Public Records Act, the identity of the complainants in these issues, who make complaints, employees who make complaints about railroad crew operations, is exempted from the public disclosure law.
Okay.
And that should be made very clear in whatever signage is adopted. And if they're going to be going to the website, the complaint form currently on the website may be confusing. And that concerns me, that people get confused and then they just stop and go away. And so I don't know what the plan is. I'm sure y'all have some type of plan to put something up or do that. But if I were worried about confidentiality of my identity and my job, to see that disclaimer at the top of the form would concern me.
Okay, so there are implementation issues, as I believe Mr. Hellman said, and there are steps we need to take to implement this going forward. And so how this appears on our website and the number that you call, we'll make sure that that's ironed out.
Right. Thank you so much, and we really appreciate everything you've done.
Thanks. Okay, Paul McGill, did you wish to? Okay, come on down.
This is still on. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, commissioners, for hearing us today, and all your hard work and concentration on this important rule that would make some consistency to the state of Washington as far as this transportation issue. One of the things I'd like to talk about briefly, and what Sharam spoke about, is the physical condition of drivers. That's really important. I understand the minimum wage level of employment, and the fact that the carriers need to make money in transportation of vans and crews and that sort of thing. But if there's a waiver, it's pretty easy to check driver's license history, right? DUIs and all that stuff. That's pretty easy to get. But physical conditions and things that might prevent somebody from being able to drive is something that's a little bit harder to get and is going to really affect their ability to do their job. And if they're, not forthcoming with that, then that would put a lot of people in jeopardy. I'll give you a brief example of one night. We were heading from Interbay to Vancouver, Washington. We got in the van. It was 8 o'clock at night, about a four-hour drive. And the driver was driving in the right-hand lane and with a lot of traffic. And I said, well, why don't you move over and get in the other lane? She said, well, I can't see very well at night. And we're leaving at 8 o'clock at night. So for 4 hours, we're sitting in that van wondering, well, you know, what's going to happen here? It certainly doesn't put you at ease. So those kind of things need to be addressed here and now with this ruling. And that's you know, you can go from here to whenever with persons with disabilities and that sort of thing. But the bottom line is they have to be able to work at night, work long hours, and get us there. So thank you.
Thank you. And Pete, I'm going to say Gushwa or Genshwa?
Geshwa. My comments have been covered.
Okay, thank you. And Eric Hansen. Okay, thank you both for coming. Anybody on the bridge line or anybody else here in the hearing room who wishes to make comments on this rulemaking? Okay, I'm not hearing anything. So we have had a recording made today, so Chair Danner can listen to the recording. We will take all of your comments under advisement, and we'll make a decision and issue an adoption order based on the entire record in this proceeding. So thank you very much, and this hearing is adjourned. Oh, excuse me, not adjourned.
What will the timeline be in terms of what happens?
I think Chair Danner is calling in right now. Our adoption hearings usually start at 1:30, so he may have been mistaken. I think we need to answer the phone, but I'm not sure we... Chair Danner, are you on the line? Okay, so the timeline is that we will probably have something out within, I would say, within the next month. And so there are timing requirements under the statutes, a certain amount of time after you submit the notice for for an adoption. I think it's 6 months, but we're not going to take that long. So I would estimate within a month we'll have an order out. Does that help?
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions before we adjourn? Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it. Thank you.